From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. A massive trove of leaked documents from the U.S. government's Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, or FinCEN, shows that big banks filed so-called suspicious activities reports on trillions of dollars worth of transactions linked to corrupt regimes, mobsters, and international criminals, relying on the U.S. government to not enforce regulations. As a result, the banks engaged in what can only be characterized as massive money laundering schemes that have now been laid bare. Among the high-profile clients of these big banks is President Donald Trump's former campaign chair, Paul Manafort. The so-called FinCEN files have laid bare the failures of the U.S. government to counter the money laundering schemes, failures so staggering as to amount to complicity. The suspicious activities reports, or SARs, were first leaked to BuzzFeed News, which then shared them with the International Consortium of Journalists, whose staff worked for months to analyze and make sense of them. One of them is my guest, Spencer Woodman, a reporter with ICIJ. Welcome to the program, Spencer.
Thanks for having me.
So first, tell me about these suspicious activities reports, a little bit more about the documents, the fact that I believe it is the banks that file these, and then the U.S. government is supposed to act on them, but apparently hasn't.
Yeah, sure. So these reports are banks are required to file these reports under U.S. law. If they operate with a U.S. dollar account with the Treasury Department, which is every bank in the United States, and then banks that deal overseas in U.S. dollars. The banks are required to file these if they suspect or have reason to suspect that there is illegal or illicit conduct occurring through their accounts, or if certain dollar thresholds are met. So, you know, these reports in many ways kind of underlie and underpin the global effort to fight flows of dirty money through banks. But they often, the reports are so numerous that Treasury Department officials often can't read through all of them individually. And what we see is our banks filing reports over and over again on big and lucrative customers, and action not being taken.
So I understand that the banks are required to report these, but they can simply report them and allow the transaction to still go through, thereby garnering them a pretty nice transaction fee.
Right, so there's this whole concept of a quote unquote defensively filed report, and that idea is that the bank can simply file a suspicious activity report on a problematic client, keep working with that client, and feel that it has met one of its major regulatory obligations in simply reporting it.
So let's talk about the fact that these documents were leaked to BuzzFeed News, which shared them with you. These are documents that the Financial Enforcement Network basically sat on, right? This is part of the U.S. Treasury. And how long did your journalists with the ICIJ work on these? What was the, what was the sort of broad view of what these documents show in terms of the banks involved and the clients they worked with?
So we worked on this project for about a year and a half.
Wow.
Some partners came in later. I probably personally worked on it for closer to a year. But it shows really in some cases, unchecked flows of dirty money around the world. Maybe most significantly, it shows an enforcement regime that is unable to meaningfully deter banks from working with suspect customers. I did a story today. We published a story I've been working on for a little while today about HSBC, which was subjected to a historic fine for money laundering lapses in 2012. But what we saw, and What's significant about that case is that the Justice Department declined to indict the bank, even though it had prepared charges relating to these money laundering lapses. Instead, the Justice Department decided to give HSBC a fine and have the bank promise that it would do better. Our story looks at what HSBC did in the years after it promised the DOJ to improve its anti-money laundering systems. One shell company that we see in our files started transacting the day that HSBC's attorneys were meeting with Senate investigators on Capitol Hill in 2012 in a money laundering investigation. Over the next 2 years after HSBC made its promise, that company moved more than $560 million in transactions. We also see that HSBC knew that one of its customers was accused of being a massive Ponzi scheme that ripped off low-income investors all around the world. In these files, we can see that they repeatedly filed suspicious activity reports on this customer that was under investigation in multiple countries for Ponzi activity, and they continued processing the transactions, tens of millions of those transactions.
So that right there is an example of how this massive money laundering scheme that these big banks are engaging in are hurting ordinary people. So how does it work from the perspective of the criminal who wants to clean their money? Can you just go through the steps? Say you're a criminal who has ripped off a bunch of people. You can't just use the money that you've, you know, gotten from your illicit activity, because you need to explain where it came from. It has to be laundered. So how did the big banks get involved?
So it can, I mean, this can happen a few ways. You can set up a shell company that has obscured ownership, and that is difficult for a bank, a compliance officer, a law enforcement agent to understand basic things about. We saw a lot of that in our reporting in Hong Kong and around HSBC Hong Kong, where there were very opaque shell companies that compliance officers really struggled to get under. Or you can operate through what you call a legitimate business. So this Ponzi scheme was trying to sell itself as a legitimate business. It was not a shell company. It was a company operating out in the open. But the problem was it was under investigation all around the world. But in both cases, the people committing wrongdoing are seeking a bank that will not ask too many questions and continue moving their money regardless.
Is this where the big banks come in, or are there smaller intermediary banks?
No, we're talking about big banks here.
Okay.
You can use a small one too, but for international, especially for international wire transfers, which are a big part of any sort of big business, you're gonna have to at some point rely on a big bank, and the reasons for that are complicated and have to do with how electronic wire transfers in the U.S. dollar are processed and enabled. But this project essentially is all about the biggest banks in the world.
And so the banks make their money from the transaction fees, right? They're basically taking a bribe to launder the criminals' money.
They certainly make money from transaction fees. They also, if they're banking a direct client, they get to use that money. They make money in all sorts of ways. If you've got $100 million in a bank account, or $100 million flowing through a bank account, there are several ways a bank makes money off that, and that is big money that they get good profits off of.
Right, so they're not just moving the money around, they're using it to make more money in the way that banks use any deposits to make money. So From what your reporting shows, there are some very clear clients that show up, the high profile ones. Give me a sense of who these men, and they're mostly men, and there's some women there, are. One of them is Paul Manafort, Trump's former campaign manager.
Yeah, so we were intrigued by Paul Manafort's emergence in various SARs because it almost operates as a bit of a case study. I mean, we have a bunch of case studies for this phenomenon of banks filing these reports and then taking no action. But the extent to which banks repeatedly filed these suspicious activity reports on Paul Manafort, just millions and hundreds of millions of dollars moving through companies he controlled and people linked to him controlled.
I imagine that some of this covered the time that he was acting as Trump's campaign chair.
Oh, of course, right. It went all through that. And then even when Manafort had to step down from his position in the Trump campaign, because of accusations, including money laundering, JP Morgan continued to move his money for a period of time, and that was in the multiple millions of dollars. When you have a client who is accused of money laundering, that is just about the biggest red flag there is. So, the Manafort items kind of epitomize some of the broader topics in our investigation.
The rest involve, there are some government officials of various governments in various countries of Kazakhstan and Nigeria. Are there narco traffickers? We know, for example, Deutsche Bank was involved. There was a book written about it that we had covered on our show. Deutsche Bank basically working with narco traffickers. I imagine that some of that was captured in these SARs, these suspicious activities reports as well.
It's almost all there, really. You name it. We also have just various reports of the major oligarchs in Ukraine and Russia and other former Soviet states moving vast, vast amounts of money through the international system. One thing oligarchs like to do is to buy their own little banks to enable having your own bank helps you shuffle your money around more to one's liking, I think. And so what we found is that a few major Western banks even maintained direct relationships with banks owned by oligarchs who had been subject to serious allegations of organized crime ties or money laundering.
So what should FinCEN have done, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network? This is the government agency that these banks filed these suspicious activities reports with, you know, essentially knowing that FinCEN would sit on them and not actually do anything. What ought it to have done?
So, you know, FinCEN is one of many government agencies and offices that participate in trying to enforce anti-money laundering laws. FinCEN is at least regard it as a bit more of an intelligence agency or an intelligence office than a law enforcement office. It's really the its primary function, from what I can see, is really collecting information. So what should FinCEN do better? It looks like they could take more of an active role in ensuring that these suspicious activity reports are filed in a high quality manner and in a timely manner. They do take action against banks sometimes for failing to report suspicious activity and things like that. But the reports we saw often were of a very low quality. FinCEN could probably help with that. On the broader question of which agencies and offices are responsible for really holding banks to account. That falls more on the Justice Department, which can bring criminal charges. Over the past several years has repeatedly declined to in these high profile money laundering cases, and also the various other offices within the Treasury and the Federal Reserve.
So the federal, the Treasury, which is where FinCEN resides, the FinCEN agency is supposed to collect these reports, and ideally we would expect the Justice Department in conjunction with them or getting that information from them to then actually move forward with criminal charges. The DOJ hasn't done much. Is it just during the past 4 years, or even under, say, a liberal Democratic president like Obama, was there inaction from the DOJ?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Obama was harshly criticized for not bringing very many criminal prosecutions and against big banks. There was even a lot of support within the public after the financial crisis for big banks to be held to account, and his Justice Department repeatedly, in some cases, did bring charges, but then did not indict, did not actually follow through with the prosecution. And that was really kind of where the era of so-called deferred prosecution agreements, where banks get off the hook, pay a fine, and promise to do better, reached its peak. Although we still see a lot of them, a lot of those arrangements continuing.
So the U.S. government, by its inaction, would you say is complicit in enabling these trillions of dollars of dirty money to be laundered through big banks? I mean, you know, banks are going to do what banks do. It's up to governments to hold them accountable.
You know, I don't think we can really expect any private enterprise that is driven by an incentive to increase profits to always play by the rules. And I do think it comes down to strong regulation and law enforcement in an area like anti-money laundering, where the potential upside of working with dodgy clients is just millions and millions in profits, even for individual bankers. So I do think that law enforcement has a big role here. And critics have, you know, this is not the first time that critics have spoken up and said that maybe big banks shouldn't be above the law when it comes to indictments and actual prosecutions.
And we can hardly expect the Trump Justice Department to suddenly begin enforcing these laws, even though, of course, Trump has called himself a law and order president. Attorney General William Barr has made it very clear that the Justice Department is there to serve Trump. They're not going to go after someone like Paul Manafort necessarily. What do you hope the public gets from this? I mean, we've seen stock values for some of these big banks that are named in these documents come down in the days after the reports were released. But I imagine that they're relying on the public's attention, government's attention, to simply fade and move on, and their stock prices go up, and them to continue with business as usual.
You know, I think a big lesson here is that it all comes down to incentives, and if a bank sees that the cost of working with dodgy clients is worth it, whether that be a regulatory cost or a fine slapped on them by the Justice Department, they may continue to do that. And the potential benefits of working with criminally connected clients up to no good is really tremendous, because a lot of people with a lot of money earned that money in ways that that U.S. and international laws frowned upon.
Where can people find out more about the work you do, and even, you know, dig through the documents themselves? I understand that you've published them all.
We have not published all the documents. We've published certain segments of certain documents. Go to our website, icij.org. That's for the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. And the whole project is there.
icij.org, and we'll link to that from our website as well. Spencer, thank you so much for joining us today, and good luck to you.
Okay, thank you so much.
My guest has been Spencer Woodman. He's a reporter with the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, and he's one of several journalists at ICIJ that worked on the FinCEN files that we've just been discussing. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.